13. After a day of dragging the rock along the forest path, the four men all agreed that the sledge and rope made the task much easier. Unfortunately, the task of dragging a heavy rock was arduous enough that much easier still meant really hard. They each took turns dragging the sledge, leaning forward into the loop of rope that rode under their arms or over a shoulder, depending on which option seemed less unbearable at the moment. The sledge was made of heavy oak and was sturdily constructed. Being a sledge, it had no wheels, just a smooth underside that helped reduce its friction. On level, even ground, it made pulling the dense ball of ore much easier, but on uneven terrain or when walking up an incline, it was just more weight to drag. When the path through the woods grew narrow, they had to take great care not to catch the sides of the sledge on a root or tree limb. If the sledge did get caught, it would come to an instant halt, causing whoever was pulling it to also stop as if they'd walked straight into a brick wall. It was more embarrassing than it was painful, and it was pretty damned painful. The men also agreed that the woods were quite nice, and that hiking through them might be rather pleasant if they had a choice, but they did not. Unfortunately, human nature dictated that anything, no matter how pleasant it is, can become hateful if you feel you must do it. Just ask anyone who's ever entered a pie-eating contest. Any illusion that they were on a pleasant nature walk was also shattered by the periodic attacks by the tree wolves. Even though they'd been warned of the tree wolves' existence, the first attack had come as a surprise. After they dispatched the wolf, Gary said, "I knew they were called tree wolves, but I thought that just meant that they lived, you know, out here among the trees, not up in the trees. Do wolves climb trees?"
"Not usually," Tyler said. "And I don't think these wolves are doing any climbing. I think they're just appearing in the trees when we approach. And before you ask, no, they don't usually do that either."
They went on like that for the rest of the day, one of them pulling, the other three scanning the trees and listening for growling noises from above. That night, as was their new routine, Jimmy scavenged for edible plants. His years living as a vagabond in Central and South America had proved to be a treasure trove of useful information.
"Thanks for the berries," Tyler said grudgingly.
"Don't mention it," Jimmy said. "It's nice to be able to pull my weight. When I was in Colombia, I was doing some odd jobs, and I spent a pretty sizable chunk of my pay on an old book about the edible flora of the Americas. It was the best money I ever spent, and a pretty exciting read. The writing was awfully dry, but the chance of not starving to death made it a page-turner. I did have a mishap with some berries that gave me the winds, but luckily it was the middle of summer and I didn't have regular access to a shower, so my normal odors were strong enough that nobody noticed the difference."
Philip said,
"Speaking of which, I would point out that you're not smelling too good these days, but I suspect I'm not smelling much better."
Tyler smiled and said,
"I can confirm those suspicions."
Philip bent his head down and sniffed his fur cloak, then winced. He thought a moment, then cupped his hand to his mouth to smell his own breath. He winced even more. He looked at his companions and said,
"Gentlemen, we've gone to pot."
Gary said, "Well, it's not like we've had a real chance to clean up. I'm just grateful that my beard is past the itchy stage."
Tyler and Jimmy murmured in agreement. Philip nodded.
"Yeah, you're right. We're all in the same disgusting boat, and the only person who's going to see us like this is Todd. I certainly don't care about his opinion. It just bugs me that these cloaks and leggings we're wearing smelled better when we got them, by looting them from corpses."
The next day they continued taking turns, one man pulling the sledge while the others fended off tree wolves. One bit of wolf-related drama occurred when a tree wolf sprang from the limbs above and landed directly on Philip's back, clinging to the black fur cloak he had been wearing since the beginning of their quest. It clamped its jaws onto his shoulder, and while it did not break the skin through the thick layer of leather and fur, if given enough time, it might well have broken some bone. It did not get the chance, as Tyler and Jimmy both leapt to Philip's aid, stabbing the tree wolf and killing it while it still clung to Philip's back. Philip was quite grateful. He was less grateful an hour later when two wolves sprang from the spot on his back where the previous wolf had died and attacked him. After a few moments of frantic fighting, cursing, and laughing, the wolves were dead, and conversation turned to Philip's cloak. Tyler said,
"You know you have to ditch that cloak, right?"
Philip said,
"I don't know."
Jimmy, grunting with exertion, pulling the sledge, said,
"He's right, Philip. The cloak has to go. The sooner, the better. In an hour, it'll be four wolves."
"No, wait," Philip said. "The first wolf was killed on my back, but the next two wolves weren't on my back when we got them, so now the cloak is fine."
Gary looked puzzled and said,
"You know, I'm not sure if he's right or not. All the times we stuck around long enough for the wolves to come back more than once, it's been dark, or there have been too many to keep track of. I don't know if they come from the spot where the last wolf died, or where the first wolf died."
"Yeah," Tyler agreed. "We haven't done a proper scientific study of it. I suppose we could."
Jimmy diverted a bit of energy from pulling to say,
"But do we really want to do it right now? On Philip's back?"
"Oh, come on, guys,"
Philip said, clutching the edges of the cloak toward him like a security blanket.
"It's cold."
Tyler nodded sympathetically.
"Yes, and the cloak will keep you warm, especially with all the exertion of fighting off four wolves."
Philip said,
"The wolf died on the back of the cloak, right? But if I don't expose the back, what if I wear the cloak inside out for the next hour, hmm?"
Gary said,
"That might work."
Jimmy grunted,
"Or you might end up with four wolves inside your cloak with you."
"Yeah," Philip said. "That doesn't sound good."
Gary said,
"Not for you, but it'd be fun to watch."
Philip looked defeated, but he didn't remove the cloak. Tyler said,
"You know we're right."
"I know,"
Philip admitted.
"It's just, I know it's cold.
Look, Gary and I can give you our wizard robes. You can put them on over yours. They aren't that thick, but with three of them, you should be okay,"
Tyler said.
"It's not just that," Philip said. I really like this cloak. It's the coolest looking piece of clothing I've ever owned. I'd never think of getting a black fur cloak, but now that I've worn one a while, I really like it."
After a moment's thought, Tyler said,
"It's not a good look for you, Philip."
"No?"
Philip asked.
"No,"
Tyler repeated.
Jimmy said, "It makes you look like some sort of man-sized rodent."
Philip said,
"Oh,"
and started taking the cloak off.
Gary said, "Yeah, Philip, that cloak, what is it? It's like a Superman cape covered with bear fur."
Philip paused in taking off the cloak and looked down at it again. Tyler leaned over to Gary and through gritted teeth whispered,
"Great, Gary. Make it sound awesome."
Philip removed the cloak and threw it to the ground. They stopped walking for a moment while Gary and Tyler rearranged their garments. They gave Philip their wizard robes. Jimmy would have gladly offered his own robe if he'd had it, but he'd been pulled into this mess wearing only pajamas, so all of his clothes were what Jimmy liked to call
locally sourced.
He liked to call it that because it sounded better than stolen from the dead. Neither Tyler's nor Gary's robes were particularly clean, so Philip put them on over his own, which was none too fresh itself. They walked away, trying to put as much distance between themselves and Philip's old cloak as possible. Gary said,
Looking good, Philip.
Philip said, shut up.
No, really, Gary said. You're like a triple wizard.
The day wore on, and wolves did not spontaneously leap out of Philip's back, as the other members had both feared and kind of hoped they would. They eventually settled into their normal routine, light conversation interspersed with periods of quiet contemplation and dreading of the night. They had all long since gotten over the idea that the nights would be pleasant in any way. As outdoorsmen, they were unenthusiastic, ill-equipped, and uncomfortable. Each night they would take turns, one of them watching for wolves, guarding the other three as they slept. In theory, it allowed for everyone to get the maximum amount of sleep possible, but in practice, it worked out to be three men lying on the cold, hard ground, trying desperately to get to sleep, while one man sat next to the fire and tried desperately to stay awake. Then, every 2 hours or so, the guard would switch, and everyone would be disturbed by the hushed sounds of two men trying not to disturb anyone. Nothing wakes one up faster than the sound of someone tiptoeing and whispering, even when one expects it. Especially when one expects it. They were all playing their daily battle of wills, where they each tried to not be the first one to suggest setting up camp for the night, when they saw it. A small trail of smoke was rising from the treetops in the distance. It was a single, puffy, grayish line that rose straight up from the treetops before the wind caught it and smeared it into a hazier, diagonal streak that faded into invisibility. Philip was about to speak, but Jimmy beat him to the punch, saying the exact word that Philip had intended to say.
Chimney!
Philip knew that there was no guarantee that there would be a cabin, or if there was, that they'd be welcomed in by its owners. The entire quest had been created specifically to make them suffer, so the idea that Todd had created whatever was ahead as a nice little break did not seem likely. Knowing this did not slow Philip's pace. The path bent away from the fire, then toward it, then away again, before finally aiming them directly at it. In the distance, through the trees, at the end of the path, they could see some sort of dark mass directly below the column of smoke. As they drew near, they could make out what looked like a porch. Then they could make out movement on the porch. Then they could tell that there were multiple people. They hurried their pace. When they got close enough to hear laughter and conversation coming from the porch, they all slowed down and listened intently, trying to figure out who and what they were going to find. When they realized that the people on the porch were all young women who seemed to be in excellent spirits and excellent health, the men started walking casually toward the source of the feminine sounds. Philip and Jimmy stood extra straight. Jimmy placed one hand on the side of his gut. Philip thrust his hands into the pockets of his jeans, causing the three robes he wore to flap open and spill back over his wrists, in a manner he hoped might be described as Humphrey Bogart-esque. Tyler draped his right hand over the pommel of his sword. His mouth formed a sneering smile that said, "I know you're happy I'm here." Gary leaned extra hard into the rope he used to pull the sledge, making sure to flex every arm muscle he knew of. They all cleared their throats, so that when the time came to speak to their new friends, their voices would be deep and rich. This is what men call acting casual. The building was surprisingly large, two stories, with a porch that ran the whole width of the building, and a veranda on the second floor that mirrored the size of the porch. There were many windows, but there was still more light outside the building than in, so it was impossible to see inside. The front door was hanging open invitingly. On the porch, three women were making pleasant conversation while they tended to their chores. All three of them had long hair, but in vaguely different styles and very different colors. One was blonde, one brunette, and the third, predictably, had flaming red hair. They wore white, low-cut peasant blouses and rough, high-hemmed peasant skirts. The redhead was turned away from the men and was slowly churning butter, doing most of the work with her back. The brunette sat straddling a washtub, her strong, bare legs holding the tub steady while she looked down and scrubbed her garments in the warm, sudsy water. The blonde stood between them, leaning against a post, knitting. She held her knitting just below her cleavage, slowly working the needles through the yarn. Her head was bowed, her eyes on her work. Her blonde hair hid her eyes, but the men could see the tip of her button nose, and her lips slowly mouthing, "Knit one, purl two, knit one, purl two." The redhead said something to the other two, both of whom giggled. Jimmy cleared his throat and said, "Good evening, ladies." The blonde looked up from her knitting, fluttered her eyelashes, and smiled. Philip got a good look at her face, and his blood ran cold. The blonde breathed, "Greetings, stout menfolk." The brunette looked up from her laundry and smiled. She wrung out whatever garment she was cleaning in such a way as to squeeze her breasts together and forward. The redhead stopped working, but stayed bent over forward and left her hands on the churn as she turned and smiled over her shoulder, saying,
"Welcome."
Tyler groaned. Jimmy grimaced and said,
"Please excuse us one moment."
The three women watched them silently as the wizards retreated several steps to confer in hushed tones.
"Why do they all look like Gwen?"
Tyler asked. Jimmy said,
"I don't know. Maybe he had a thing for Gwen?"
Philip said,
"No, that's not it. The last time he saw her was years ago from his point of view. He'd have met plenty of women between then and now, and copying them would have been much easier than making a likeness of Gwen from memory. No, he set this up to torture us. Maybe he figures we all have a thing for Gwen. Gary, he was your apprentice. What do you think?"
Gary shrugged.
"Yeah, I bet that's it. After all, we all did have the hots for her back then, didn't we?"
"Well, I don't know that I'd say that," Philip said. "I mean, she's certainly an attractive young lady, but I never really considered a romantic relationship with her."
"Yes," Jimmy agreed. "She was always a valued member of the community, and any man would be lucky to be in a relationship with her, certainly. But to say that we all had the hots for her, isn't it all accurate?"
Tyler nodded emphatically.
"I mean, sure, if she were interested, there isn't a wizard in Leadchurch who wouldn't have been interested as well. But no, Gary, I don't think it's fair to imply that we were all just sitting around pining after Gwen."
Gary said, "Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you all can tell yourselves whatever you want. But I'm pretty sure that Todd walked away thinking that we all had the hots for Gwen."
Tyler asked,
"Well, what gave him that impression?"
Gary said,
"I did. When I told him that we all had the hots for Gwen. In fact, I might have said those exact words several times."
"Why would you tell him that?"
Philip whined.
"Because it's true. Be honest, Philip. Not one of you denies that she's attractive. Not even just now. All you really said was that you weren't planning to act on it. Well, Martin and I did. And that's probably why we got further with her than any of you ever did."
"She turned you down,"
Tyler said.
"Yeah,"
Gary said.
"But that's one step further than you got."
"Okay,"
Philip said, attempting to get the conversation back on track.
"We can discuss this later, or preferably not. Right now, Todd's clearly trying to use the three Gwens over there as bait."
"Yeah," Jimmy said. "I say we go ask some questions, see if we can figure out what the trap is."
After a silence that implied consent, Jimmy walked back toward the porch, the other three men following very close behind. Jimmy cleared his throat again and said,
"We've been walking for many days. It's been a long time since we've had a roof over our heads or a hot meal."
The blonde Gwen parted her cherry red lips to speak, but was interrupted by a distant, muffled voice from inside the building that said,
"What's that? Who are you talking to out there?"
"Here it comes," Philip thought. "He lured us in close with the ladies. Now we'll get surrounded by angry male relatives, and we'll have to fight our way out."
The blonde kept her eyes locked on the men, but tilted her head back over her shoulder and said,
"Come see for yourself."
The door opened, and another stunning young woman with Gwen's face emerged. This one with short jet black hair and features altered to look vaguely Asian. Now that they were close, the wizards could see that while all four of the women looked similar enough to Gwen to be recognizable likenesses, none of them was quite right. One had cheekbones that were a little too pronounced. One had a jaw that was a little too square. One's eyes were a little too large. Like the miners and the wolves they'd been fighting off, the women were artificial creations, just perfect enough to look totally wrong. But Philip knew from experience that being struck or bitten by them felt perfectly convincing. There was no reason to believe that anything these Gwen clones chose to do wouldn't feel equally real. Philip made note of this fact, then felt ashamed of himself for it.
"Oh,"
the new Gwen said,
"who are our handsome visitors?"
The blonde, whose gaze had never left the men, said,
"Warriors on a long journey. I expect they'll be looking for a place to rest."
The black-haired Gwen took stock of the men, then said,
"I'll go prepare the guest beds, though I don't know how restful their night will be."
The other Gwens tittered and blushed as the black-haired Gwen disappeared into the house.
Jimmy said, "Please, ladies, we appreciate your offer, but we don't want to be any trouble."
The blonde Gwen said,
"Kind sirs, please don't embarrass us with talk of money."
Philip noted that just like every other character in this ridiculous quest with whom they'd tried to talk, the responses didn't quite match what they had said. This was obviously because Todd had pre-programmed the character's dialogue without knowing or caring what the wizards he trapped would actually say. The spokes-Gwen continued,
"We insist that you stay with us. Please, you'd be doing us a favor. The four of us have lived alone here since we were small girls. We've been without any companionship since our father died. Somehow."
Tyler turned to Philip and mouthed,
"Somehow."
Philip waved him off.
"We have a great deal of delicious food, all of which has been cut into bite-sized morsels, perfect for hand-feeding. We'll happily share it. All we ask is your company. We have never had men visit before. We are very curious and have many questions."
In spite of himself, Jimmy asked,
"What kind of questions?"
The blonde said,
"And of course, we'll give you shelter for the night. We have soft beds, satin sheets, silk pajamas, and a large variety of exotic lotions."
Gary stammered,
"Oh, that's a lot of smoothness."
Jimmy blurted, "Excuse me," and turned his back to the Gwens, walking back to where he thought they could not hear. Jimmy said,
"I stand by my position that this is a trap."
Philip nodded.
"Clearly."
"Yep."
Tyler agreed. Gary said,
"Let's go in."
Philip goggled at Gary and said,
"It's a trap! Why on earth would you want to go in there?"
Gary said,
"I'm curious. I want to see where this is going."
"Have you been listening?"
Philip asked.
"Have you looked at those women? It's perfectly obvious where this is going."
They all glanced back at the women. The redhead and the brunette had gone back to slowly churning the butter and scrubbing the laundry. The blonde was watching the men talk, while absent-mindedly putting the end of one of her knitting needles in her mouth.
"Yes,"
Gary said,
"and I want to see it."
Jimmy spoke up.
Look, I agree it's a trap, but maybe we should go in.
Philip let out a long groan, then said,
You desperate, lonely old...
No, Philip, that's not why we should go in,
Jimmy said.
Look, they have food. Food that isn't wolf jerky.
Food that's probably poisoned,
Philip said.
No, Tyler said. If Ty wanted to just poison us, he'd have probably done it by now.
Right, Jimmy agreed. And they have a roof and a nice warm fire, and probably a place where we can get cleaned up.
Philip said,
Oh, I don't doubt it. I'm sure the bathtub is the very center of their decor in there. That or a big bearskin rug. And we'll be able to figure out what their plan is,
Tyler said.
We know what their plan is,
Philip said.
Enough of it, at least. Tyler, Jimmy, I expect this kind of thing out of Gary, but I can't believe that this is what's finally brought you two together. You really think this is the smart move, spending the evening with Zoot, Dingo, and Piglet there?
Tyler muttered,
Holy Grail,
then asked,
Piglet?
Philip said,
Yeah, she was one of the doctors who examined Michael Palin. The other was named Winston.
Look, Jimmy said, we know it's a trap, right? So that means we have the advantage. All we have to do is keep our eyes open and be ready for it when the trap springs.
Tyler added,
Besides, pretty much everything here is a trap. At least this one looks like fun.
Philip knew he was defeated.
Okay, we'll go in. I guess there's no harm in having a look. There's only harm in Martin finding out about this later. Or even worse, Gwen.